Welcome tonight to the class, The Road of Wisdom. In this session, session number 7, we're going to be talking about who is Proverbs talking to. Everyone has probably heard of the field of marketing before, but marketing is not simply about selling a product. It's about communication. The most effective marketing begins with a clear understanding that different people are moved by different needs, different desires, different fears and circumstances. A message that resonates deeply with one individual or group may just fall flat with another. For this reason, a skilled marketer does not speak into just the abyss of humanity. They focus their communication towards someone. They identify a specific target audience and then craft their message in a way that appeals to that audience's lived experience or situation. One of the most powerful tools in this process is the creation of what are known as personas. A persona is a carefully constructed representation of a typical member of a target audience. It gives a face, a story, or a set of descriptors to what otherwise would just be an abstract and undefined demographic. So instead of saying, for example, in general, that you're trying to target young professionals age 25 to 35, a marketer might imagine a persona named Jessica, a recent graduate trying to navigate career pressures, financial uncertainty, and a desire for meaningful success. By constructing this persona, the appeals in the marketing communication become more precise, more empathetic, and thus more persuasive. The marketer can now ask, well, what does Jessica like? Or what does she hope for? What problem does our company solve for her? This same principle, that is communicating truth in a way that connects with specific audiences, can be seen in the literary and theological strategy of the book of Proverbs. Rather than presenting wisdom as just this kind of one-size-fits-all abstraction, Proverbs addresses a range of what could be called personas, each representing a distinct audience with unique needs, challenges, and life circumstances. Proverbs recognizes that wisdom must be communicated differently depending upon who's being addressed. The more effective a message is tailored, the more effective it is to the audience. The more it will then likely resonate with them and have the intended effect. For example, as we will see, Proverbs speaks to the young and naive, which are those who are still forming their ability to make sound judgments and are especially vulnerable to temptations and poor decisions. To this audience, the message might be preventative and very vivid, offering what might be called some borrowed experience to guide them from the outset before they encounter life's dangers firsthand and have to learn their lessons the hard way. At the same time, Proverbs also addresses the wise and discerning, as we'll see, but not as those who have already arrived and are finished, but as those who have attained some wisdom but are in need of continuing to grow. For them, the communication might shift toward refinement or deeper understanding or the interpretation of more complex life situations. In this way, Proverbs functions much like a masterful marketing campaign, though its aim is far higher than trying to persuade someone to buy a product, support a social or political campaign, or participate in an event. It understands its audiences deeply and communicates in ways that meet them where they are at. Each, quote, persona is addressed with different types of language, perspective, and instruction that is geared toward their condition and need. Yet all of them are being drawn toward the same ultimate goal. Right from the start in the book of Proverbs, it doesn't present itself as a narrowly targeted document to just one individual or group, but as an integrated manual for all of life. And in the opening verses that we've looked at establish a multi-layered purpose, but also a multi-layered audience. In the opening verses, Proverbs signals that its intended audiences are individuals that occupy various stages of life, levels of maturity, spheres of responsibility, and social standing. And each major audience receives wise instruction that's suited to its conditions and circumstances. Yet, all are being guided down the same road toward the same overarching goal of living wisely in God's world and in alignment with Him. The first audience that I would like to talk about are men, the Hebrew word ish. As one reads the book of Proverbs, it becomes increasingly apparent right away that the book's perspective is noticeably male-oriented. Much of its instruction assumes young male audiences who are being trained in virtue, self-control, and social responsibility. This is especially clear in the repeated warnings to avoid what is called the strange or the foreign woman, who is a figure who's portrayed as being a seductive, deceptive, and an immoral influence on them. She's depicted as someone who lures men away from wisdom and righteousness, using flattery and sensual appeal, and leads them toward ruin and death. The framing of this warning places the burden of moral vigilance on men, while simultaneously casting certain women as embodiments of temptation and vice. These passages reinforce a binary contrast between these two types of women. There is the dangerous outsider, and there's also, as we're going to see, the idealized, faithful wife or woman. Proverbs encourages men to remain loyal to their wives, often portraying marital fidelity as both a moral duty and a source of stability and blessing. The faithful wife is associated with wisdom, honor, and domestic prosperity, as we'll see later on, while the opposite, the foreign or strange woman, symbolizes like chaos or disorder and immorality. Proverbs reflects the social and cultural realities of the ancient world. That is what lies behind the male-oriented perspective that it takes. In the ancient world, there were patriarchal structures that shaped both family life and social standing. The emphasis on male self-control in the face of female seduction may be intended as practical advice, but it reveals underlying assumptions about gender roles and power from that culture. Women are portrayed not as independent moral agents, but as influences upon men, either positive or negative. Therefore, Proverbs presents a moral vision that prioritizes male discipline and loyalty while framing women in ways that achieve that goal, thereby exhibiting its distinctive gendered perspective. The next audience are known as the naive and the youth, the petit and the na'ar. The most pervasive audience in Proverbs is the naive and the youth. This grouping of these type of people are described as not yet firmly shaped in their judgments. They're open-minded, not in the modern positive sense, but in the sense of being wide open, being easily duped, being very impressionable. And this signifies this wide-open gullibility that leaves the individual without the necessary mental filters and awareness, making them very credulous, weak-willed, and easily seduced. While the naive is currently in a state of being naive and unstable, they are considered exceptional candidates for training and education that Proverbs can offer. And that's why they are the primary target audience for the wise instruction in Proverbs. The term that's translated as youth, na'ar, it's not so much about biological age as it is more to a social status and a dependency and inexperience. Na'ar identifies someone who's not yet an independent head of a household. They still require oversight and guidance to navigate the transitions into adult responsibilities. Proverbs directly identifies its purpose in relation to this group. In Proverbs chapter 1, verse 4, it says that one of the purposes of Proverbs is to give prudence to the naive, knowledge and discretion to the youth. Also, the vulnerability of the Peti and the Na'ar can be discerned in Proverbs chapter 7, where it says in verse 7, "And I saw among the naive, I discerned among the youths, a young man lacking sense." This Hebrew expression, lacking sense or judgment, it literally means lacking heart or being essentially empty-headed. The youth are portrayed as being, as not as being like defiantly wicked, but as rather being just kind of thoughtless, being like airheaded. They're drifting into danger because they've not yet required the mental faculties to grasp the consequences of their actions. This instructional method for the audience is more or less preventative. Because the young lack their own history and understanding through experience of maybe trial and error, Proverbs provides this sort of like substitute experience for them, or borrowed experience, where they can like learn lessons and receive a flight plan for life, providing them with the necessary skills to be able to navigate the complexities of certain situations before they actually encounter them. The next targeted audience are the wise and the discerning, the Chacham and the Navon. The book of Proverbs is not just a primer for people who are inexperienced, like the youth or the naive. It's also a very sophisticated manual for people who are wise already and have discernment. These individuals are characterized by an attitude of receptivity. They recognize that wisdom is an ongoing journey rather than a static attainment that they have already achieved. For this advanced audience, the text of Proverbs kind of shifts its focus from basic moral survival aspects to the refinement of interpretive skills and strategies for being able to understand complex life situations. Proverbs chapter 1, verse 5 serves as kind of like a parenthetical call that interrupts the book's initial purpose statements to address this specific group. It says, "A wise person will listen and increase in learning, and a discerning person will get wise guidance." This verse emphasizes that the acquisition of wisdom is a shared lifelong undertaking. And then Proverbs chapter 15, verses 14 reinforces this by contrasting the appetite of the fool with that of the discerning. It says, "The heart of one who has understanding seeks knowledge, but the mouth of fools feeds on foolishness." In the biblical worldview, the heart essentially is the focus or the center of intellect and emotion or rational function in a person. We might think of it today as our mind. A discerning or understanding person is never stagnant. They have this habitually characterized notion and thirst for just seeking more wisdom. And they use their inner resources to internalize knowledge that they gain, both from successes and mistakes. A defining trait of the wise and the discerning is not some sort of absolute mastery, but it's rather, it's a radical teachability. As we'll see in the next session of the class, the mocker is one who is incorrigible and unteachable, but the wise person loves the one who reproves them, as it says in Proverbs chapter 9, verse 8. The depth of this teachability characteristic shared by the wise and the discerning is how they respond to correction. Proverbs chapter 17, verse 10 says that a single rebuke has a deeper effect upon a person of understanding than 100 lashes or blows upon a fool. The next target audience are the leaders and civil servants. Now, a significant portion of Proverbs functions as, you could say, professional training for those who are in positions of responsibility. They have a particularly role as a leader, their administrator, or even a government official. While the Hebrew term like eved can refer to like a common servant, in royal contexts, it often denotes a high-ranking official, maybe a minister of state or something like that. The initial purpose statement of Proverbs explicitly identifies the goal of imparting righteousness, justice, and integrity. And these are the very social virtues that are required for a leader in order to be able for them to provide the proper underpinnings and stability for an ordered society. Proverbs speaks directly to this class of people, emphasizing that success in their office or in their responsibilities is directly tied to having wisdom. In Proverbs chapter 14, verse 35, it says, "The king's favor is toward an insightful servant, but his anger will be upon the one who acts shamefully." This insight that the servant has is like an intellectual clarity and competence by which he's able to serve the king. But a leader must be able to master these sort of situations to know which servant has insight and is able to function as an expert in their field. This value of professional kind of discernment is encapsulated in the description of noticing someone who is skilled or has insight. And if in Proverbs chapter 29, verse 14, it says, "A king who judges the poor with faithfulness, his throne will be established forever." The king who's able to perform his duties toward certain classes of people, such as the poor, has a long-ranging effect on his success and his duration. It says here, if a king will judge the poor with faithfulness, the consequence then is that his throne will be established forever. He will be a ruler by which the people will come to love and respect, and therefore his tenure, you might say, will be extended because of the favor of the people. The instruction that's given to the audience here of like leaders and civil servants and things like that, they have a lot of characterizations in the book of Proverbs where the ruler is supposed to listen well, the ruler is supposed to be able to administer justice, the ruler is supposed to be able to stabilize a nation through righteousness and be able to defend the legal rights of the poor and the oppressed and the marginalized. If you consider a young public official who's faced with pressure to manipulate information, Proverbs frames this as the ultimate test of wisdom. Will they uphold righteousness or not? Will they display conduct that conforms to God's standards, or will they succumb to the deceptive bread of the political expedience and popularity? Thus, Proverbs functions as this curriculum for governance, emphasizing that true authority is not found through like brute force or oppression and injustice, but in a humble and hearing heart that can discern between good and evil, and then act with compassion and integrity. There's also another large target audience in the book of Proverbs that deals with families, marriage, and households. While Proverbs does include instruction for public life, it consistently locates the foundation of wisdom within the family unit, viewing the home as the natural place for teaching and learning. And as we've already seen, there's a frequent address in Proverbs about my son. And it refers to this kind of specific educational setting where the parental instruction is intended to ensure that children don't leave the home and then enter society undisciplined, naive, and foolish. While this parental dimension is the primary viewpoint in Proverbs for instruction, we can also see this sort of fatherly figure that comes up a lot as the wise, benevolent guardian, showing tender love for his pupil. In Proverbs chapter 1, verse 8, it says, "Listen, my son, to your father's teaching, and do not ignore the instruction of your mother." And likewise, in Proverbs chapter 10, verse 1, it says, "A wise son makes his father glad, but a foolish son brings grief to his mother." Both the father and the mother are presented here as like a unified parental unit. They're responsible together for the moral training of their children. Because of this collaborative authority, education in wisdom in the home is not some merely hierarchical arrangement. It's a shared mission that is geared toward pointing the child in the right direction. The goal of the teaching is the complete formation of the person. And by the son internalizing the parental principles and then developing an internal guide, it will function then like sort of a faithful companion along their way in life, guiding their heart, Proverbs says, guiding their path and being able to avoid pitfalls and other tragedies. This sort of like multi-generational transmission ensures that wisdom becomes, as Proverbs says, the crown of glory that is passed from parents to children and then their children to their children, producing a lasting legacy of righteousness. In Proverbs chapter 19, it says, "A house and wealth are the inheritance from fathers, but an insightful wife is from Yahweh." And then in chapter 21, verse 9, it says, "It is better to live in the corner, on the corner of a rooftop than in a house with a contentious wife." Alongside the familial language of father and mother and son, Proverbs also employs marital terminology, such as the man or the husband, the woman or the wife. These paired terms are significant because they present marriage as the arena in which wisdom can be embodied or undermined. Just as the child needs to heed instruction and teaching, adults likewise must choose wisely in being able to form a strong and sustaining marital bond. The relationship between the husband and the wife is not treated in Proverbs as like as socially incidental, but it is central to the moral stability, order, and covenantal faithfulness in God's world. This emphasis is captured in Proverbs chapter 19, verse 14, where there's a sharp distinction between the marital inheritance and relational blessing. While property can be passed down through generations as an inheritance, a wise wife is ultimately a divine gift. This underscores that the success of a household depends not just on economic resources, but on the character and embodied wisdom within the marriage. This aligns with Proverbs' broader teaching that wisdom cannot be reduced to merely external benefit or advantage. It's something that's granted, it's given, it's cultivated, and it's lived out in relationships and guided by Yahweh. At the same time, Proverbs offers a stark realism about the potential for relational discord in marriage. As we read in chapter 21, verse 9, this gives a vivid image communicating the misery and instability that can accompany a contentious relationship within the home. The point is not to single out women and speak disparagingly against them, but to warn against toxic behaviors, such as strife and contention, that would disrupt and corrode the harmony that's necessary for a household to flourish. In the broader context of Proverbs, there are similar warnings that apply to all forms of foolishness, and they include the failures of the husbands too. Nevertheless, the proverb here reinforces wisdom in a marriage is essential for the well-being of everybody, both the husband and the wife, and then the household. Taken all together, these proverbs that have this familial, marital, and household language, they really deepen the significance and need for wisdom in such relationships by framing marriage as a gift and responsibility, and the way that a prudent spouse contributes to stability, joy, and blessing within the marriage and household, whereas foolishness by a spouse introduces tension, strife, and isolation. And so Proverbs presents marriage not as a social arrangement, but as a crucial reality in which a person can demonstrate wisdom and its value. The household becomes the proving ground where wise instruction is lived out in partnership, shaping both the present well-being of the marriage and family and one's future legacy. The next target audience is basically the universal audience. You could say it's humankind, Ishim, or the Bnei Adam, the sons of humankind, just human people. Beyond specific social groups like we've been describing or certain types of demographics within society, Proverbs presents wisdom also as just addressing humanity at large. They move past boundaries of ethnicity, gender, age, and social standing to offer a universal appeal. Wisdom is personified as a vibrant public figure who roams the busiest quarters of a city to ensure that her message reaches people in every walk of life, in their daily occupations and social relations. And this universal invitation is articulated through emphatic terminology, such as in Hebrews chapter 8, verse 4, when it says here, with wisdom being personified, "To you, O men, I call out, and my voice is to all humankind." Here, the cry of wisdom to the men, or to all humankind, essentially, to the sons of humankind. Basically, wisdom is crying out to anybody who will listen. It's the universal scope of the book of Proverbs that is personified by her going out into the public and then having her voice echo through the public spaces, which is supposed to symbolize that wisdom is a shared experience by all humanity. There's not a sort of elite or sacred group by which wisdom is then trying to reach. It's the ordinary arenas of life where people from all backgrounds, they make decisions about right and wrong, about relationships, about justice, about how they conduct and behave themselves in moral categories. By situating her call in these public locations, Proverbs underscores the way that wisdom is not somehow hidden or exclusive. It's available to all who will listen, regardless of their status or identity. And this universality is deepened in Proverbs chapter 15, verse 11. It says, "Sheol and Abaddon lie open in the sight of Yahweh. How much more do human hearts?" Even the depths of Sheol, death, or Abaddon, destruction, even they are fully known to God and fully visible. Then, if that's true, how much more certainly is it true that God sees into every human heart? He sees every intention, every thought, every moral choice. Nothing escapes his notice. This verse reinforces wisdom's call not merely as being public, but it's penetrating and it's comprehensive in its scope. No individual is beyond its reach. No inner life is exempt from its demands. Wisdom, therefore, addresses all of us, not externally, though, in just public places, but also internally at the level of our personal conscience, making its universal invitation also a universal accountability. And then we have women and female representation. Although much of Proverbs is framed as instruction to male students or men, women play a vital role and a multifaceted role as well within its framework. Appearing as authoritative teachers, idealized embodiments of virtue and wisdom, and powerful symbolic personifications. The Hebrew term isha, a woman, encompasses both the literal and symbolic representations as mentioned, and it serves as a primary vehicle through which Proverbs dramatizes the choices in life and the moral skill one must have to be able to make the wise choices necessary to avoid evil and harm. Proverbs is kind of unique in this way in the ancient world by granting women and also mothers to be primary instructors in the education of children and the education of wisdom. That's not popular in ancient literature. In Proverbs chapter 11, verse 16, is one of the places where Proverbs does directly address women. It says, "A gracious woman will attain glory, but ruthless men will attain riches." And then in Proverbs chapter 11, verse 22, this is a description of women. like a gold ring in a pig's snout, so too is a beautiful woman who turns aside from good judgment. Although wisdom is predominantly framed as addressing men, we see here there's a couple proverbs that directly address women. They offer this brief but revealing glimpse into the way that women are mentioned within the wisdom tradition of Proverbs. Nevertheless, these verses, they don't oppose or disrupt the overly male-oriented focus of Proverbs. But it's important to notice that women are not excluded from Proverbs. In Proverbs 11:16 here, we see that the woman is not just passive, but if she will acquire honor through her gracious conduct. This aligns with the larger picture of Proverbs that addresses men as well, suggesting that these virtues are not somehow inherently gendered, or somehow if instruction is the wise instruction is not applicable to both men and women. And then in contrast here, in like chapter 11, verse 22, there's this striking metaphor about women that underscores the importance of inner character versus outward appearance, which is a common theme in Proverbs, including with men as well. However, this verse also reflects a cultural tendency to evaluate women in terms of beauty and propriety more explicitly, though, than it does men. The critique is less about beauty itself, though, and it's more about the mismatch that often exists between external attractiveness and internal character. Together, these verses reveal a tension. Women are both included in the moral vision of Proverbs and constrained by gender conventions of the ancient world. While Proverbs affirms that women and foolishness apply to all people, it still filters its teaching through a social structure that centers on men, leaving women visible but not fully centered within its target audiences. But given that fact, the book's conclusion in Proverbs chapter 31 presents a woman as the concrete fulfillment and embodiment of the entire book's wisdom education program. This woman in Proverbs 31 is not a decorative figure or a passive homewife. She is a wealthy entrepreneur who buys fields, plants vineyards, manages a household full of children and servants, conducts international business, and is a recognized voice in her community. Scholars suggest that the inclusion of this industrious wife of chapter 31 is the ideal counterpart to the personification of Lady Wisdom in the prologue of Proverbs in chapters 1 through 9. While the first chapters 1 through 9 of Proverbs portray wisdom as a young bride who is seeking a suitor, the final chapter of Proverbs shows wisdom kind of settled down as becoming a skilled manager of her own household. In this framework, women serve as the ultimate exemplars of wisdom in action. They demonstrate that true wisdom is not a lofty philosophical attainment, but it is a skill at living in the qualities of daily hard labor, family responsibility, and faithful service. And so that's why in Proverbs chapter 31, the woman there can be, the translation could be the virtuous woman, could be the excellent wife, or could be the valiant lady or the woman of strength even. And these are the main audiences of Proverbs: men, the young and naive, the wise and discerning, leaders and civil servants, families and households, all of humanity, and women. Now, the book of Proverbs, with all these different audiences, emerges as a profoundly inclusive and dynamic guide to all of human flourishing. It extends its instruction across every layer of society and age, from the naive youth to the seasoned elder, from household members to national leaders, and ultimately to every person in the world. The wisdom of Proverbs is not restricted or coveted to only a certain group of people. It is intentionally meant to be practical and universally accessible to all. And therefore, each audience is addressed according to its need, yet all are unified around the single aim to cultivate lives that are ordered by wisdom, righteousness, and in alignment with God's moral design and authority. The progression of different audiences reveals that wisdom is not a static possession, but it's a lifelong pursuit. The naive are invited into formation, the wise into deeper refinement and growth, and leaders into responsible and ethical application. Families serve as the foundational training ground, embedding wisdom into the rhythms of daily life, while public life tests and displays that wisdom and its state of maturity in the individual. And the vivid personifications of Lady Wisdom and Lady Folly especially address the fact that every individual stands at a crossroads in their life, faced with choices that would determine their journey and their destiny. In the next episode, next session of the class, we're going to talk about the various different types of fools that are in Proverbs. We'll see you then.